Future-Proof Extra from Newstalk.
Now, have you ever given money to charity or volunteered your services to aid another organization or even donated a part of your body to somebody else? What were you thinking? What makes people commit such acts of kindness, especially towards complete strangers? Well, according to our next guest, kindness is as bred in our bones as our anger or our lust or our grief or desire for revenge. Michael McCulloch is a professor of psychology at UC San Diego and author of a new book called Kindness of Strangers, How a Selfish Age Invented a New Moral Code. Welcome to the program, Michael. What sort of research is being done on this idea of why people do good? Because it, from a psychological point of view, it's really, really interesting to understand that, certainly for charities trying to raise important issues, for influencers trying to figure out how to get people to do the right thing, whether it's in politics or in their local school. Understanding how to get people to be good is really important. How do you study that, though? Because what goes on inside someone's mind is often kept to them, and what motivates someone to do good isn't always very clear.
Right. Yes. This is one of the reasons that a lot of us tend to be quite suspicious of self-reports. Probably the easiest way to think about studying someone's behavior is sort of to ask them, hey, what did you do this week? You know, how much did you give to charity in the past year? Do you volunteer with a volunteer or a charitable organization in your community? And of course, we know that these self-reports are vulnerable to whatever motivations people bring to the process of answering a question like that, a desire to look like good, decent, not psychopathic people. Yeah. And that act of telling someone who you are can be influenced not just by truly who you are, but also by a desire to present yourself as a kind of person.
So then researching something like this, presumably you have to sort of trick people into thinking they're doing something else. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the research that's being done at the moment and why when it comes to altruism and kindness?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's great experimental work where we really do try to get people to reveal who they are through their behavior. We set up a situation in the laboratory, for example, where we have them interact with someone, a stranger generally, and the person tells you that they're going through a tough time and they're having trouble getting money together for, you know, any of a variety of, you know, I need to buy a car. My car's broken down and I'm struggling right now to get to work. We give people an opportunity, you know, to read this story. They think they're reading about a real person. And then the question is, if you have some money at this end of this experiment, we create an opportunity for you to share your earnings from the experiment with the person you've been interacting with. And if we do that in an immaculate enough way, we think it gives us a window into people's true motivations. They think they're giving spontaneously and anonymously. So that's one way we do it in the laboratory.
And what do people do? I mean, when nobody's looking, are human beings kind?
Well, we do find if they are exposed to needs and they are from people that they've had some interaction with, they've had the ability to kind of engage in this face-to-face sort of relationship building that, you know, these are not people that will go off and have a beer together or become best friends because they're still strangers. But if you've had some, you know, person-to-person interaction with someone who's revealed that they have a need that you are in a position to help fulfill, we do see people providing some benefits, reaching into their own pockets, volunteering to help. And this is over quite a few studies. So the key seems to be face-to-face or, you know, person-to-person. You believe there's a real human being with a need, and you are in a position to give money that you haven't budgeted it's valuable to you, but not necessarily something you've already committed to something you really care about.
I
do see kindness in a situation like that.
That's great to hear. I'm wondering what factors affect behavior. I remember hearing about a sort of setup that one psychologist did. They wanted to see how helpful students who played a lot of violent video games were. And in this one instance, there was a teacher and they would be talking to their student, or a confederate who talked to their student and then accidentally knocked over a container of pencils. And the study found that the people who play violent video games were less likely to pick up the pencils and help the person at the table, which to me seems like a big extrapolation. There may be many other reasons. Maybe people who play violent video games aren't very social or have the confidence to do that. Maybe they have a different sense of boundaries or whatever. But I'm wondering, does the evidence show there are certain factors in people that make them more kind? Do you find in your research that richer people or poorer people are kinder? Are people who are very sociable kinder, or people who are spend a lot of the time on their own? Are there factors that affect kindness?
There are clear individual differences between people. In fact, there's a personality trait that tends to crop up in lots of different societies around the world that we often call humility altruism. In fact, it's just a person. You know, it's a tendency by your own report to take an interest in the welfare of others. There's one called honesty humility. Some theorists refer to it. And there's another one that's related called agreeableness. And these absolutely are stable individual differences among people that tend to make some of them more concerned about the welfare of strangers than others. And this does end up having an effect on behavior. The effects are not huge, but we, you know, there is a small but reliable tendency for some people simply to be more generous than others. So yes, that absolutely. But we also know some things about the differences in people's social environments or social lives that make a difference as well.
Such as?
Well, one of the things we know you can easily block, you can easily do to block empathy and the effects of empathy on altruism, is you can ask people to try to stay as objective as possible when they're learning about someone else's plight. If you say, you're going to interact with this person or read some stories about their lives, but we want you to simply focus on the facts. Try not to get emotional. Try not to think about how the person is feeling. Just focus on the facts. We find that this actually reduces empathy, and it also reduces people's willingness to help them out, you know, through charitable giving. So The natural state, it seems, the natural state of human psychology is to take in emotions, to listen to how other people are feeling. And if this is someone you've formed a sort of proto-relationship with, and you find out that they're going through a hard time, the spontaneous response is to want to help them, want to share. And we can block that by trying to cut people off from their emotions.
What about people who have lots of money? Are there studies that look at wealthy versus poor? Because there's sort of two narratives there, and often the one we think of is that the people who have the least give the most. And I'm wondering, is that borne out in the science?
Yeah, if you look at people's patterns of charitable giving, at least in the United States, I don't know if this applies, everywhere, but you do find that the poorest segment of the population do give larger proportions of their earned income to charities than richer people do. And that's the case even though we have higher amounts of income inequality in this country than we've had in quite some decades. So yeah, it does look in a sense that even though you see the wealthy having potentially huge amounts of charitable giving they can do, just in absolute numbers, that they are giving less of their income as a percentage of their wealth.
Has your work ever thrown up something that was very unusual in terms of kindness research in the lab? Have you ever fallen across something that you were very surprised by?
Yes, we found one of the more famous findings in social science are results from an economic game that experimental economists, as they're called, developed you know, going on 40 years ago now, I guess, called the dictator game. And really what they were trying to establish is whether people factor into their thoughts about what they want in life, what would make other people happy. And they called this a social preference. So the idea was, hey, look, economics has missed something. What it's missed is we don't only act out of an interest in what we want, but we also factor into our choices what we think other people want, which you know, sounds like a, you know, a great thing in life. You know, we'd want a world like that. And the way they evaluated this idea over hundreds of studies was through a game called a laboratory game called the dictator game. So Jonathan, I'm going to give you $10 or whatever, and yes. I'm simply, and I'm going to ask you to keep as much as you want and share as much as you want with this stranger that you've never met, and I'm just going to see what you do with the money. And when we pose this to people, we find that, you know, on average, people will share about 20, 30, depending on what study you're looking at, 20 or 30 or 40% of that income with a complete stranger. So that looks great, right? When you spontaneously have the opportunity to share, you do. What we did in my laboratory was we tried to remove all of those features of the situation that would lead you to believe that there was someone who could evaluate you as a bad person if you didn't share.
Right.
And once we removed those factors, we found that sharing went to zero. We had no people who were willing to share with a stranger that, as far as I know, don't have any needs, right? So this is just a stranger you know absolutely nothing about. So it's basically a question of fairness. Will you reach into your pocket, not out of altruistic concern for somebody, but out of a basic, you know, willingness to split, you know, your windfall with another person? And so this was a result that really opened our eyes in my lab and made us stop and think, whoa, wait a minute. What is it about this naked, contextless social situation that is inhibiting giving, if you like, or not stimulating the desire to give? And that's where we really started thinking about how important it is. And this is just, you know, this is as plain as day to any normal human being who's thinking about this from the outside. Yes, we don't walk around the streets just randomly giving money to other people because we think it's fair. But when we do encounter needs, then that kicks in a whole psychology that governs, you know, how we evolved to live in society. We evolved around other people who have needs, and when we encounter these needs, we want to try to help make them better off, you know, for a variety of reasons. One is it's a nicer world to live in when everybody's doing well. And also because the world we evolved to live in was a world where most of the people you encountered were, in fact, people you knew.
Yeah.
So we give on the basis of needs spontaneously, but not on the basis of sort of this disembodied abstract notion of fairness.
And which is why Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People was so successful, because it really focused on actually be interested in people, want what they want, and ask them about themselves. I mean, it's an amazing book in many ways, because it just reminds you of how to be human. And,
right.
And that approach to sales actually is obviously extremely successful. Tell me about the book, Michael. The book is looking at sort of the history and evolution in a way of this kindness that we're talking about.
Yeah, The Kindness of Strangers was a book that I wanted to write because although I had been working as a dusty laboratory social scientist for years, what I didn't understand was how we went from a human life 40,000 years ago, surrounded by people we knew, where our interactions with strangers were largely true strangers from other ethnic and linguistic groups, were marked by hostility and fear, to a world that we're in now where people regularly experience concern for far strangers on the other side of the world that they'll never interact with, whose names they will never know. And yet we feel compassion for them, and we actually go to some, you know, take some energy and expense to try to help them. You can see this through the social institutions we have, you know, the huge amounts of effort we've put into helping the developing world to get more self-sufficient. You see this through all of the governmental and non-governmental institutions we've built up through the 20th century. You see it through the social welfare systems that most modern societies now have that developed in the late 1800s and early 1900s.
We see it in social media. We see people willing to give money to businesses who may have suffered racism, or even just individuals who do nice things unprompted, and they get the light of the internet shone upon them, and random strangers give them money to sort of give them a virtual clap on the back. So in terms of history, how do you follow that in the book?
Well, one of the things I was trying to figure out is that given the fact that our psychology, the human mind, is the same as it was 40,000 years ago, if the mind hasn't changed, then what has changed? And the conclusion I came to by working through this history from when we actually moved into cities some 12,000 years ago up to the present day is that our increasing concern for these distant strangers, which I call notional strangers, the people you know are out there, you know they're suffering, but you don't have this direct contact with, has been driven by not only by our evolved concern for others, you know, the sort that I've been studying in my laboratory, but also through repeated confrontations with mass suffering that kind of showed up on the doorsteps of our cities or in far-flung parts of our countries or in different classes of individuals that have caused us to stop and say, is this a problem for us corporately, collectively? Yes or no. In what ways is it a problem? And yes or no, or here's the list. And should we do something about these problems? Yes or no. And if so, what should we be doing?
Yeah.
Right? So I actually see the march of reasoning through history as having been much more powerful than, you know, the force of natural selection as Darwin taught us to think about it, or anything else. It's been sort of a procession of reasoning where we keep the reasons we had from earlier eras, the good ones, and we build on those as time marches on.
Well, as I say, Michael traces this in his book. It's called The Kindness of Strangers, How a Selfish Ape Invented a New Moral Code. You can buy it now. Michael, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks for having me.